welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering broadcasts from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Crime coming up in this hour. Later on, we hear The Whisperer. But right now, it's an episode of Dragnet called The Big Gone. Jack Webb stars in this NBC and Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast from November 30th, 1954.
To hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a robbery detail. You get a call that a flower shop has been held up. Two men have been shot. One of them killed. Your job? Check it out.
It was Tuesday, June 8th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Chief of Detectives Thad Brown. My name's Friday. We're on our way out from the office, and it was 10:15 a.m. when we got to the corner of 7th Street and Bunker Hill Avenue. The Stoneham Flower Shop.
Back there, sir.
Wasn't any way for me to know what it was all about until it was too late.
Yes, sir.
Just stood there. Didn't move around. Just stood. Oh, you fellas want to see me?
Police officers. This is Frank Smith. My name is Friday.
Central?
That's right.
Roberts, one of 16.
You answer the call?
Yeah.
I'm the fellow that shot the crook, you know.
Yes, sir. Did you get a description?
Yeah, it's out. Metro's sending a couple of cars to help us look for the suspect.
Very good.
Anything else I can do for you?
No, not right now.
Okay, I'll get on outside then.
Right, thank you. You'll take care of the report then, won't you?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll check with you.
Sure.
Nice fella.
Yes, sir.
Could have used him back to home.
Sir?
Good man like that. Could have used him.
What do you mean?
Ran a detective agency back home. Had a couple of men sleuthing around. He made a good one.
Mm-hmm. Would you tell us what happened here?
Ain't nobody done that yet?
No, sir. We just got a hotshot call. There'd been a robbery and shooting. We came right out from the office.
You heard about it?
No, sir.
Well, don't you worry. I'll fill you both in and give you the whole story.
All right, sir, if you would.
Abner Stoset.
What's that, sir?
Full name's Abner Davis Stoset. After Jeff.
Who?
Jefferson Davis, the president.
Oh.
Don't usually use the middle name. People out here don't seem to understand three, just the front and back. Abner Stoset.
Yes, sir. All right. Now, if you tell us what happened.
The shot Danville.
That's the victim.
Yep. Shot him right here, just above spleen. Here.
Mm-hmm. How'd it happen?
It looked like 38 automatic.
Well, yes, sir. But what led up to the shooting?
Two fellas. They tried to rob him.
Mm-hmm.
Tried it with the wrong two men, tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
Out loud.
Sir?
Tell you that out loud.
Oh, I see. Do you want to go on?
Well, same thing every morning.
Yes, sir.
We make up the deposit slip, take the money to the bank. You're the one who does it right and don't have to do the walking. This time, Danville Road, I was going to make a trip.
Yes, sir.
I was about to leave. These two young guys come in the place. First off, I figured they want to buy some flowers. You know, something like that.
Yes, sir.
Danville was going to take care of them. Excuse me a minute, will you?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Stone and Florist. Yes, sir. Oh, no, we can take care of it for you. That's right. Where do you want them sent? Yeah, just let me check the book here a minute. Walnut Creek. Yeah, we can do it for you. No, sir, we'll send them by wire. Well, they'll be delivered in about an hour. That's right. You want the long stems? Yeah, well, they're $7.50 a dozen. That's right. Yes, sir, you want to give me the charge information on that card? Yes, sir. And how do you spell that? Yes, sir, the number? No, sir, the one on the lower right. Yeah, it's 726. All right, is there a message? No, not at all, sir. I think it's real pretty. Yeah. No, they'll put the card in. We just wire the order. They'll be very nice. Yes, sir. Thank you. Call us again. That's right. Bye. Got to send some roses up to Walnut Creek. Birthday for a girl named Irma.
Wonder if we get back to what happened here.
Oh, yeah. Well, these two fellas came in. They just stood there with their feet kind of spread out like they just got off a boat, you know. Stood there, just looked around.
Was there anybody else in the store?
Just Danville and me.
I see. What'd the men say to you?
Only one of them talked, the dark one. He asked me if there's anybody in the back, at workroom back here. I told him there wasn't, and that's when he showed me the pistol. Stood there in high cotton, waving it around, told me to hand over the bag of money.
Were you carrying it at the time?
I told you that before. I was on my way to the bank.
Sir.
Danville wrote the slip. I was going to the bank.
I understand.
Now, what did he say when he showed you the gun?
Said it was a stick-up.
Do you remember his exact words?
They happened kind of fast for me. Let me see. I think it was, don't try anything. It's a stick-up, like that, he said it.
I see.
Now, how'd the shooting start?
Well, Danville said he wasn't going to have no kid talk to him like that. He reached out, took a swing at the kid, a real roundhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Dark kid ducked back, pulled the trigger, shot Danville right here. Spleen. Dropped like a rock.
Mm-hmm.
I pulled out my gun, started shooting.
You always carry a gun?
When I'm going to the bank, you never know what's going to happen.
You have a permit?
It's against the law to carry a gun without permission, ain't it?
Yes.
Well, then I got it.
After you pulled your gun, what happened?
A shot.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Shot right at the dark fellow.
Mm-hmm.
You hit him?
I don't often miss.
I see.
Hit him 3 times. Here in the chest.
Mm-hmm. What was the other man doing while this was happening?
He pulled out a gun, too, and the balloon went up. Bullets flying all over the place.
Yeah.
Then both of them took off, run out of the place. I followed them.
Mm-hmm.
Got to the door. The dark one turned around. Gonna shoot at me again.
Uh-huh.
Didn't move fast enough. I pulled the trigger, hit him right in the middle of the chest. Went down like a dropped duck egg.
What about the other one?
He started running down the street. I guess about the only thing he was wanting was to get away.
Yeah.
Took 2 shots at him while he was running. I blazed away. Only had 2 more bullets in the gun. I gave them both to him.
You hit him?
Yeah, at least once, because I saw him jerk. It might have been both times. He kept running, though.
What'd you do then?
I come back in here, see what I could do for Danville. Made him as comfortable as I could, and then I called the police.
Uh-huh.
He came sliding up and took out after the fellow that got away. The ambulance came and picked up Danville and the other guy.
Yes, sir. Now, I wonder if you could give us the description of the man who got away.
Yeah. Guess.
I'll call Georgia Street and check on the other suspect.
That ain't going to do no good.
What?
You don't have to inquire about him. He's dead.
You're sure about that?
Son, I know when somebody's dead.
Yes, sir.
I hit that fella 4 times in the chest with a .44. I saw him drop. About as much life as a sack of cornmeal. He was dead.
I'll check anyway.
All right.
Yeah, sure sorry.
What are you sorry about?
I say it's a real sorry that you can't work with that other young fellow that was in here. You know the one in uniform. He was a bright boy.
Mm-hmm.
This fella here, he couldn't even fill out an application for our agency.
Would you give us the description?
First line.
I beg your pardon?
I say he wouldn't even be able to fill out the first line. Didn't know who Jeff Davis was. Hard to believe.
Yeah, and how about that description?
Well, fellow was about your height, weighed in maybe 150, around there.
Mm-hmm.
He had light hair, lighter at the top and down by his head, like he was bleached in the sun.
Any marks or scars?
No, nothing that'd stand out. He had a kind of a flat face.
What about his clothes?
White shirt, kind of tan pants, carrying a leather jacket with the fur around the collar.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Both of them had those.
Was there anything in the way they talked? An accent, maybe?
No, just North talk. I can't tell the difference much of the time.
Mm-hmm. Would you know the man if you saw him again?
You bet I would. Just stand him up in front of me, and I'll lay it on, point him right out.
Mm-hmm. What'd you find out?
I talked to the hospital, Joe.
Yeah?
Are you sure you hit one of the suspects, mister?
Positive.
And he was on the sidewalk?
Saw him hit and die.
What's the matter?
Well, the ambulance only brought in one person.
Yeah.
The dead man's gone.
Put in a call to the hospital and made arrangements to talk to the ambulance crew. They told us that they'd only picked up one person at the scene. They went on to say that there wasn't another injured party on the premises anywhere. A check with the officer who answered the original call brought out the information that there hadn't been anybody on the sidewalk when the radio car had gotten there. Frank put out a local broadcast to all cars in the area, and I went back to talk to Abner Stosett.
I told you before, that boy ain't too bright.
Now, you're sure you shot that man?
Look, I'll go along with you and say maybe I did miss the first 3 times. That ain't likely, but just for the sake, I'll admit it.
All right, sir.
But I know I hit him outside. I was closer to him than I am to you. Ain't nobody could miss that close.
All right.
Come on outside. Take a look at the sidewalk. You tell me if it's my imagination.
All right, fine.
I got it out, Joe. All the cars in the area are looking for it.
All right, fine.
One thing I'm always proud of is the way I can shoot. I don't hardly ever miss. I know I didn't this time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just look at that. Take a look. You tell me that's blood, ain't it?
Yes, sir, it looks like it.
It is. I was standing right here. Right here. He was there. He turned around, tried to shoot me. I fired at him. He went down right there. You can see where the big stain is. Right there.
Uh-huh. Well, how'd they get there?
What do you mean?
Well, did you see a car?
Yeah, I told the other cops about it. That's it right there. I drove up in it and got out.
Did you see him get out of the car?
Yeah, I was just leaving the store, and I saw him right after they come in the store.
All right, you want to check the car?
Yeah.
Now, don't go touching it. The cop said not to.
Mm-hmm. Was there anybody else who saw the man on the sidewalk?
You mean besides me?
That's right.
Not that I know of. As soon as I emptied my gun at the blonde fella, I went back in the store. I stayed there till the police car pulled up.
Mm-hmm.
Not more than 3, maybe 4 minutes.
Yes, sir.
Not more, but I'm telling you, he was right here. Lying there, and he was dead.
Mm-hmm.
Crime lab's on the way out to check the car.
Mm-hmm.
Well, looks like the suspect might have gotten up and walked away, doesn't it?
If he did, then it's really one for the books.
Trail of bloodstains here.
Yeah.
There's never nothing like this happened back home. Back there, when you shoot somebody, he's got the courtesy to stay shot.
Trail stops.
Mm. Let's check over there and see if we can pick it up.
Yeah. How about it?
Nothing. It just stops, that's all.
Maybe somebody picked him up in the car.
Yeah, must be. Was there anybody else parked in front of the store at the time?
Not that I remember. You can see yourself. We got the sign where it says just for the customers.
You're absolutely sure there was nobody else?
If I wasn't, I'd have told this fella.
Yes.
You didn't see the man get up off the sidewalk?
No, there wasn't no reason for me to look at him. Far as I was concerned, he was dead. Still ain't sure he wasn't.
Well, the trail of bloodstains showed that he did leave here.
It still don't sell me.
I better start checking the neighborhood.
Right.
You want me to help you?
No, sir, that won't be necessary.
Mr. Friday.
Yes, sir.
Could I talk to you for a minute?
All right.
Alone?
Excuse me, Frank.
Yeah.
Mr. Friday, I saw that man fall. I saw him hit the sidewalk. I know he was hurt bad. He wasn't going to get up. I'm sure of it.
Yes, sir, we understand.
I told him all that. I just don't see how I could have made a mistake like that. That fella couldn't have gotten up. He's dead.
Yes, sir, we believe you, but he's not here.
That don't change a thing, my boy.
How's that?
He's dead someplace else, that's all.
An immediate search was started of all buildings in the area. If the suspect had walked away from the scene, the amount of blood on the sidewalk indicated he couldn't have gotten far without help. While Frank and I talked to the shopkeepers in the vicinity, a check was made of the car that the thieves had used. It was found to be stolen, and arrangements were made to talk to the owner. Members of the crime lab crew came out and checked the vehicle. They were unable to turn up anything we could use in identifying the holdup men. 11:28 a.m., Frank and I talked to the owner of a small tobacco shop.
Saw the whole thing.
Well, where were you during the shooting, Mr. Collard?
Right out in front. I looked down the street, and there it was, just like it was a cinemascope.
Now, sir, did you see the actual shooting?
Well, not the first. No, I was in here, behind the counter, fixing up a new bunch of pipes we just got in, putting them up on the board. All of a sudden, I heard this noise. First off, I thought it might be a backfire. Then I knew.
Yes, sir?
It wasn't. It was shots. So I went outside to see what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing I see, these three guys come out on the sidewalk, right in front of the flower shop, three of them.
Mm-hmm.
Abner and a couple more. One of them black-haired, the other was kind of blonde.
Yeah.
One of them tried to get Abner. The other one took off in this direction. I see Abner raise that gun of his and pointed at me, and I ducked inside.
Did one of the men go by here?
Yes, Abner shot at him a couple of times. Must have hit him, because I could see he was hurt when he run past.
Did you see where he went?
No. I told you, when those shots started to go by, I didn't want to wait around to see if one of them was monogrammed for me. I left.
All right. Can you tell us what direction the man took?
Not after he went by the door. Must have gone around the corner.
Well, why'd he say that?
Well, because when I went back out, I couldn't see him. If he'd gone up the street, I'd have been able to.
Now, did you see the man out in front of the store?
You mean Abner?
No, sir, the one he was shooting at. The
yeah, I got a pretty good look at him.
Where was he?
He was just lying there. He wasn't moving around much.
Did you see him get up?
No. What's all this about the other guy for?
Well, what do you mean?
The one Abner killed. Why all the questions about him?
Well, sir, he's gone.
You mean he got away?
Yes, sir, it looks that way.
Well, I don't see how that could be. I went right by him, a couple of feet away. There wasn't no life in him then, nothing. He left there, and somebody had to carry him.
Yes, sir, that's the way it looks.
No reason for anybody to do it. The man was dead. There's no reason at all.
Well, there must have been one.
Why?
He's not there. Frank and I checked out the rest of the neighborhood, but we failed to turn up any information. None of the shopkeepers in the vicinity had seen where the blonde holdup man had gone. All of them who had seen the man on the sidewalk were willing to testify that he was dead. Yet the physical evidence at the scene indicated that he'd gotten up under his own power and walked away carrying four bullets in his chest. 2:40 p.m. Frank and I returned to our car and began to cruise the streets in the area. 3:15 p.m.
Well, it doesn't look like we're going to find him.
Well, Frank, he's got to be here someplace.
Unless somebody picked him up.
Yeah, it's possible.
Hmm. Yeah.
Fellow on the bench over there, you see him?
Oh, yeah. Waiting for the bus.
He was there when we went by before. Take it easy when you pass him this time.
All right.
Better pull over.
Yeah.
Matches the description.
Uh-huh.
Looks like bloodstains on his shirt from here.
It sure does. Fits in good.
All right. You cover him from that side, I'll go this way.
Right.
Joe, he's got a gun.
Joe, you all right?
Yeah, thanks to this mailbox.
I saw him pull a gun, thought sure he got you.
Well, he didn't miss by much. Well, we better check him.
Yeah. I hit him twice, Joe.
Take it easy. He's dead.
There wasn't anything I could do. It was you or him.
Puts us in a corner.
Yeah.
He was our lead to the other suspect.
You are listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action.
The coroner came out and removed the body. The victim was identified as Jeffrey Burnham, age 27. From his package, we found that he'd been arrested several times on charges of armed robbery and that he'd served one term in San Quentin. Abner Stoss had identified him positively as one of the holdup men. Frank and I went back to the office to do a complete check on his friends and known acquaintances in the hope that we could turn up something to lead us to the other man. The search for the dark suspect was continued during the night without result. The next morning, we met with Lieutenant Stoner and we made arrangements for additional men to aid us in checking out the list that we'd made on Burnham's friends. 8:47 a.m.
You ready?
Yeah, let's go. I get it. Robbery Friday. Yes, sir. Run away. Yes, sir. Bye. The victim, Abner Stosset.
Yeah?
Says he came across something this morning.
What was it?
Should tell us who the missing man is. We left the office and drove out to the florist shop. Abner Stosset met us at the door.
I don't know why I didn't think of it yesterday.
What's that, sir?
You remember how I told you they was both carrying leather jackets?
Yeah.
Well, after I shot the one fellow on the sidewalk, I came back in here to take care of Danville.
Yes, sir.
I looked around to find something to put under his head. Wait, here, man, I'll get it.
All right.
I guess I didn't think much about it, you know, kind of all upset.
Uh-huh.
But cleaning up this morning, I found it. It should give you something to work on.
Well?
There it is. You can still see the stains on where the fella dropped it.
Yeah.
Are you sure this jacket belonged to the missing suspect?
Yeah, you remember how I saw him drop it when he got shot? I remember it good.
All right, sir, thank you very much. We'll check it out.
You shouldn't be too much trouble.
How's that?
Here, take a look. I found this myself here.
Huh.
Laundry tag.
We took the jacket over to the crime lab. Lieutenant Lee Jones started to check through his records for the name of the cleaner that had serviced the garment. Frank and I went back to the office and talked with Officers O'Donnell and Gerber. They told us that the list of the suspect's friends had been checked without result. The search for the missing man had been called off, and the additional units had returned to Metro Division. At 4:30 p.m., we got the call from Lee Jones. He gave us the name and address of the cleaner. Frank and I left the office and drove over to his shop.
Yes, sir. Something I can do for you?
Police officers. This is Frank Smith. My name's Spidey.
Oh, how you doing, sir? Hope there isn't anything wrong.
No, sir. We just like some information.
I got it. It's yours.
All right, sir. Ever see this before?
Leather jacket. A lot of them around.
How about this tag here? It's one of yours, isn't it?
Let's see. Yeah, it's our mark.
Can you tell us who brought this jacket in to be cleaned?
It'd be hard to say.
Well, the way we got it belongs to a fellow about 25, dark hair, about 150 pounds.
We do a good-sized business. Hard to remember all the people who come in.
That's right, sir, but do you have that many leather jackets?
No. Wait a minute. Let me think a minute. It might be outside, but it could be.
What's that?
Halleck. Norman Halleck. He looks like how you said. I've done some work for him and his family. It might be him.
Can you tell us where we can find him?
Well, I got his address in the book. I can look it up for him.
If you would, please.
Might be. I hear he's been in trouble with the cops before.
Would you know what for?
No, it's just neighborhood gossip. Not anything I'd want to put my name on.
Uh-huh.
Here it is. Norman Halleck, H-A-L-I-K, 10267 Sacramento Street.
All right, sir. Thank you very much.
Why don't you tell me what he's done?
I think it'd be better if we talk to him about that.
Sure, it's his business anyway.
Yeah.
That's the trouble with people nowadays. They're all the time pushing in on somebody else.
Uh-huh.
Telling things they aren't sure about, giving people bad names for nothing.
Well, there's one small difference here.
Huh?
This fellow made his own name. We got Halleck's address, and we drove back to the office. We checked the name through R&I and found that he had several arrests for robbery and one for assault with a deadly weapon. We pulled his mugshot and drove out to see the victim, Abner Stosset.
No, that ain't him. No. No. Wait a minute. Here he is.
You're sure, are you?
Yeah, I think so. Let me see that again.
Go ahead.
Eyes are the same. Hair's a little shorter. No, it doesn't make any difference.
Sir?
That's the man.
Frank Frank and I drove over to the address on Sacramento Street. We checked with the landlady, and she told us that Norman Halleck was in his room. We went upstairs.
That should be it.
All set?
Yeah.
Freeze, Halleck, right there.
What do you want?
Turn around.
What?
Turn around. Put your hands up on that wall.
Come on, move.
Stand still.
All right, he's clean, Joe.
All right, let's go.
Well, what's this all about?
Come on, let's go.
Well, you got to make a charge.
All right, suspicion of robbery.
You're out of your head.
You tell us about it, will you?
Sure, it's a bad beat.
It always is, isn't it?
Well, it doesn't make any difference. You take me down, book me. I'll be out right away. All I need is a little time.
Yeah, well, then you're in real trouble.
Huh?
You just ran out of it. We searched the suspect's room, but we failed to find anything to further tie him in with a robbery shooting. He was taken to the city hall, where Frank and I talked to him in the interrogation room.
How about it? Does that jacket belong to you?
I don't know.
The cleaner says it does.
Well, a lot of leather jackets. How's he know this one's mine?
All right, Halleck. Now, come on. We got you made and you know it.
I told you before, this is a bad beat.
You're going to save yourself a lot of time if you cop out.
I'm glad to help, but I can't give you anything.
Where were you yesterday?
Home.
Anybody to back that up?
Yeah.
Well, then you can come up with a name.
Sure, all you need.
You know a Jeffrey Burnham?
Burnham?
B-U-R-N-H-A-M.
I know a lot of people. I might know him.
All right, now, this is a simple question. Just give us an answer, will you?
You put it like that, I got to say no.
Stand up.
Huh?
Nothing wrong with your ears. Stand up.
All right, now what?
Take off your coat.
What?
Your coat. Take it off.
You guys have gone straight up. All right, now what?
Take your shirt off.
Huh?
Come on. It's simple. Take the shirt off, will you, fella?
I put the third degree out. You're going to freeze me to death?
Come on, move.
All right, now what?
Turn around.
When do you turn on the blue light?
Frank?
Yeah.
All right, you can put your clothes on and sit down, Halleck. Come on.
Yeah.
You stay there, Halleck.
Well, what do you think?
He looked awful good for a while, didn't he? Sure blows it up.
Yeah. Supposed to be shot 4 times in the chest.
Not a bullet wound on him anywhere. A special show-up was arranged, and the suspect was shown to the victim. On seeing Halleck in person, he was unable to give us a positive identification. The suspect was detained at the main jail while we checked out his alibi for the day of the robbery. It held. Several people swore that he was 2 miles from the scene when the shooting took place. We questioned him about the leather jacket. He was unable to come up with an explanation as to how it could have gotten to the scene. We checked out all of the people in the building where he lived, all of his friends and associates, and on June 11th, he was released from custody. 10:16 a.m., Frank and I got back to the office from the main jail.
Well, I guess better check with the skipper, huh?
Yeah.
You got a good excuse?
Yeah, we'll just tell him the way it happened. He has to go along with it, the truth.
Well, Joe, it isn't logical that a man could walk around with 4 bullets in his chest and we can't find him.
Well, then you tell me what we're looking for.
Well, you think Halleck gave us all he had?
I don't know. At least we know he's clean.
Yeah. Well, where do we go from here?
We'll go tell the skipper.
All right.
Put it in the books and keep working on it. We got one thing with us.
Huh?
That guy's around someplace. Sooner or later, somebody's going to have too much to drink, maybe get in a fight with a girlfriend, trust somebody too much, but they're going to say something. When they do, we'll hear about it. And we'll get to him.
Yeah.
Just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
One thing, we got more than he has.
The story you have just heard is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent. On June 11th, a meeting was held in the captain's office, Robbery Division, Los Angeles Police Department. The case was completely reviewed and a report written on the results of the investigation. As of this date, that investigation is continuing.
Dragnet. The story of your police force in action is a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
Dragnet, on Tuned 2 yesterday from November 30th, 1954. That episode first heard on NBC. And at the time of that episode was the most listened to crime show on the air, drawing over 5.5 million listeners to their radio sets Tuesday nights at 8:30 in an era where Dragnet was also on television. You're listening to An Hour of Crime on Tuned 2 Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levillier, and now on to The Whisperer, starring Carlton Young. This episode called Fight Game from NBC, heard on August 12th, 1951.
persuade Ballou to sell Noonan's contract.
My Noonan's contract. What if Ballou refuses?
You will persuade him. The method is your responsibility. You will not fail.
The Whisperer, starring Carlton Young. The Whisperer, a brilliant man who, losing his voice in an accident which crushed his vocal cords, worked his way deep within the crime syndicate to help destroy it from within. To the underworld, his familiar rattling hiss is the voice of authority, to be obeyed without question. Then a miracle of surgery performed by Dr. Benjamin Lee restored his natural voice, enabling him to resume his real identity. Now, as Philip Gault, aggressive young attorney, he skirts the thin edge of death, living his dual role. For as the Whisperer, he sets in motion the forces of the syndicate in Central City. Then, as Philip Gault, uses his knowledge to fight the organized network of crime which seeks to control the fate of millions in cities and towns across the nation. Now in Philip Gault's oak-paneled law office, we find him at the telephone speaking in the voice of the Whisperer, making his report to a superior in the syndicate in New York.
Hello, New York. Jordan given instructions. Will advise later.
Aha.
Aha yourself. What's in that pretty head of yours?
Brain. I just figured out something.
Yeah, what?
Well, under ordinary circumstances, when you give out with that horrible voice of your alter egos, you instruct someone to kill someone else.
And?
And then you have to break your neck to stop the killing you started in the first place.
In the second place, sweetheart, the syndicate starts it.
Well, anyway, our whole evening is ruined.
Okay, so...
So, tonight I notice you didn't give instructions to have anybody killed. Ergo, that means you don't have to involve yourself in that horrible syndicate business. And you can devote your full attention to paying attention to me.
But, Ellen...
Yes?
It would be a pleasure.
Oh, no!
So what's the matter?
Well, you agree with me.
Well, don't I always?
Well, you've got that backwards. It's not don't you always. It's you always don't.
You know what I was thinking?
Should I know?
A place where we can have a nice, leisurely dinner. Look soulfully into each other's eyes over coffee with soft music in the background.
Mm.
And then emerge into the evening in search of entertainment.
Honest, Phil? No syndicate business at all?
Well, nothing pressing.
Phil.
Now relax, sweetheart. You won't be able to digest your food properly if you don't.
Mm, it's been so long. So long.
Since we had an evening like this?
Uh-huh. Every second, I think something's going to come along and spoil it.
Nothing can. Only, this thing tonight with Jordan, why would the syndicate be interested in buying out a fighter's contract?
I don't know, and I don't want to think about it. Look at that woman's hat over there.
Lovely. Of course, it's the fight game, and fighting's been a source of income for gamblers, touts, and fixers almost since boxing took up the Marquess of Queensberry rules.
It isn't lovely, it's monstrous.
What is?
That hat. You haven't been listening to me.
Every word. Now, as soon as you put away that lipstick, we can sally forth and find us some entertainment.
Hmm, any idea what kind? There's a show at the Circle that got wonderful reviews.
As a matter of fact, I have an idea.
Wonderful, darling. Don't tell me. Let it be a surprise.
This last round may have a knockout in it because Sullivan's knees are buckling. And there it comes, a hard left to the middle. An uppercut that snaps Sullivan's head. All this battling Abby is dynamite. Sullivan is groggy, his eyes are glassy, and I think, yes, the referee is stopping the fight. It's a TKO for battling Abby in the sixth round.
I was looking for a surprise.
Ladies and gentlemen, the radio audience,
this is entertainment, sweetheart. This kid Noonan is an up-and-coming youngster. Well, I thought you liked the fight.
So do you, if it fits in with your plan.
I didn't have any plans. I used it tight. This won't take but 5 minutes.
What won't? Phil Gault, where are you going?
Back to the dressing rooms. I want to speak to Kid Noonan's manager.
Oh.
You understand? And I don't want you pushing so much tonight. This boy is a counterboxer. He doesn't lead.
He waits for you to open up and then he counters. Yeah, what is it?
My name is Gall. I'd like to talk to you, Corky.
No, not now. What kind of brains you got, Gall? The kid's going out there in a few minutes.
Sorry, I didn't know you were giving him last-minute instructions.
Well, I'm all through with him anyway. Keep those muscles rippling. Over here, Gall. We can talk for a couple minutes anyway.
Okay. Nice boy.
Yeah, he's coming. Coming. Not up there yet, but a comer. If I can get him fights.
Yeah? Why can't you?
Gangsters are trying to take over the fight game, Sonny. Lay down, kid. Relax. Relax.
Gangsters?
Yeah.
Does that have anything to do with your face looking like it had an argument with a buzzsaw?
You're not so dumb, Gall.
But I don't understand why anybody beat you up.
Well, better you don't understand. Look, what can I do for you?
Well, I was wondering if Kid Noonan's up for sale.
You too.
Me too what?
Wanting to buy the kid.
Oh. Who else wanted to buy him?
A guy who wouldn't take no for an answer and then gave me this going over.
But it was still no?
Yeah, to him and to you. The kid is my boy and I'm keeping him. If I can figure a way to get him some fights.
You don't know this gangster?
No.
He called himself by some name, didn't he?
Smitty. That tell you anything? You're like a fighter with both eyes closed, in there swinging against the champ. This Smitty said he was representing someone else. A certain group is the way he put it. But I know who that certain group is.
These gangsters?
The syndicate, Sonny. They've been trying to buy their way into the fight game for months.
Oh, to rig the betting, things like that?
You're getting the idea. Control. Who wins what fight? Who gets the big buildup for chance?
And they're forcing you to sell by making it tough for you to get fights.
Sure, if I can't get fights for my boy, what good is he to me? I might as well sell him.
How do they go about keeping you from getting matches?
Look, getting the right fights arranged for your boy ain't easy in the first place. You gotta pick your spots. See that he comes along gradually, doesn't get in over his head. But my boy happens to have a good right hand, and a lot of fighters don't want to get in the ring with him.
But you just said...
That's just part of it, Sonny. To get a match, I gotta go through a promoter. Somebody who hires the hall, arranges for the promotion, selling tickets, publicity. Well, I'm having trouble with the promoters lately, too.
You mean the promoters are playing along with this syndicate you mentioned?
Maybe playing along, maybe being forced to play along.
Have you taken this up with the boxing commissioners?
Now, what's the use? What are they gonna do about it? Look, I gotta take my boy out there now. This may be his last fight for a long time.
Suppose I take it up with the boxing commission.
You? Go ahead. Fellow by the name of Jordan's your best bet.
Jordan?
Yeah, you know him?
I might. And I might, as a lawyer, be able to get Kid Noonan some fights.
Well, you can try. I'll give you a list of the boys I'd like to match him with. If you do...
If I do?
I'll buy your tickets to the kid's fights for the next 10 years.
Kid Noonan, what a sweetheart of a fighter with dynamite in his right hand. And Lefty Johnson's got a lot of respect for it. There's the end of the first round, folks. Here's a word about Whetstone.
Nice shoulders on Kid Noonan.
Seems to have a lot of promise, doesn't he?
He can promise me something any old time.
You know, it'd be a shame if his future in boxing were suddenly cut off, wouldn't it?
You mean the syndicate?
The kid's in the middle, like between the frying pan and the fire.
Why?
Because if Corky won't sell his contract, the kid won't be able to get any fights. And if the syndicate does buy him, it'll be for their own purposes. Fixed fights, phonies, gambling coups. Nice, huh?
Well, what can you do about it, sir?
I can stick my nose in and smell around anyway. Now, here comes the second round.
It's the second round. They come out of their corners and meet in the center. Oh, brother. Kid Noonan is going to fool around this time. There's a slashing left. Now that right cross is over. Lefty's on the rope, hanging on. Oh, it's a cinch now. He's got all the time in the world. There it is. Lefty Johnson's down. A short right. It didn't travel either. As we pick up the count, it's 6, 7, 8, 9, and out.
Let's go, Ellen. I want to see someone.
Syndicate business.
No, my own. I'm going to find out about a man named Jordan who's on the boxing commission and how the syndicate goes about keeping Kid Noonan from getting fights. Ellen. This fellow Jordan I called up when I used the whisperer's voice to give instructions.
What about him?
Corky Ballou told me the man to see on the boxing commission is named Jordan, too.
Oh? The same one?
Could be. I don't know. Press in that cigarette lighter, will you, sweetheart?
Oh, no.
Oh, no, what?
It'll set off another one of your gadgets.
No, I just want a cigarette. Here, take one out of my jacket pocket and light it for me, will you?
All right.
No.
What?
Not that case. Put it back. There's an open package of cigarettes in my pocket.
What's the matter with the case?
Ellen.
What?
Don't press that catch. The case is loaded.
Loaded? With what?
Enough explosive to blow this car to kingdom come. Now put it back in my pocket.
Bill Galt, is this another gadget of yours?
A kind of deadly gadget, Ellen. Now just slip it back. Easy. That's fine. Thanks.
What do you expect to do with it?
Well, you can never tell when a situation will come up that demands a little subtlety.
Subtlety? With a miniature atom bomb in your pocket? Here, your cigarette.
Thanks.
Deliver me from a slap-happy gadgeteer.
I'll deliver you right to our destination. Here we are. And please don't divert Mr. Jordan's attention while I'm talking to him.
Divert his attention?
By being so ravishing.
Norris, it's a pleasure to meet you.
It's a pleasure for me just to look at such a beautiful home, Mr. Jordan.
Thank you.
Well, being a boxing commissioner must be a good job.
Oh, no, Miss Norris. It's an honorary job. No fee involved at all. I've been lucky in life, Miss Norris.
Oh? You picked the right father? Left you this beautiful house?
Mr. Galt, she's priceless.
Well, that's what I keep telling her. I can't pay her what she's worth.
Now, tell me, will you have a drink? Scotch? Bourbon?
No, thanks.
Not for me.
Well, I'm going to mix one for myself, if you'll excuse me.
Certainly.
Well?
It's him.
See, Jordan?
I recognize his voice. The one I spoke to on the phone.
Now, what can I do for you, Mr. Galt?
Well, frankly, Mr. Jordan, I'm here on serious business. Business that you might not like. I'm an attorney.
Oh?
I have a client who thinks he's being damaged.
Well, have I damaged him?
Indirectly, perhaps. That's what I'm here to find out. My client's name is Corky Ballou.
Oh, the fight manager. Yes, he manages a boy called,
Kid Noonan.
Yes, Kid Noonan. A good fighter. Likely to go places.
That's just it, Mr. Jordan. He's not likely to go places at all. Corky can't get a fight for him.
No?
This one tonight was the last he could arrange.
Well, that's odd. The other fighter's afraid of him?
Perhaps. And perhaps it's that no promoter wants to arrange a fight for him. Mr. Jordan, I think it's possible I may be able to find some kind of monopolistic policy which the courts would frown on.
That's an odd thought.
Well, I don't know why it's odd. There are monopolies in commerce and industry. Why can't there be monopolies in boxing?
Well, I'm not a lawyer.
I am. I wanted to ask you why Kid Noonan can't get any fights in this town.
Well, frankly, Mr. Galt, I don't know.
I see.
However, I'll look into it if I may.
Certainly.
And I'll call you in the morning, Mr. Galt. Good evening, Miss Norris.
Goodbye.
It was a pleasure meeting you.
I don't believe it.
Believe what?
That Mr. Jordan is mixed up in any way with the syndicate.
He's the Jordan I gave instructions to. He's the one who told someone by the name of Smitty to buy Kid Noonan's contract from Corky Ballou. And when Corky wouldn't sell, Smitty gave him a terrible beating.
Smitty? He must be one of the syndicate's hired killers from out of town.
Uh-huh. Sent here to work on this job with Jordan.
But Mr. Jordan is so cultured, so refined.
Yes. Come on in with me.
Where? This drugstore?
Yeah. I want to make a phone call to New York. Ellen.
It's about time you got through. I
think you can fit in here with me.
Why, Phil Galt, I'd love to try. What is it?
I just got my instructions from New York. I want you to hear me pass them on. Nice, refined Mr. Jordan. That's how much you can take a woman's intuition.
Hello?
Jordan.
Yes?
New instructions. Corky Ballou will be at his training camp. Rosedale Lake tomorrow.
Rosedale Lake tomorrow.
Come in for a minute, Phil.
Thanks.
And so quiet all the way here.
Have I been quiet? I've been thinking, Ellen.
I can see where that would take up your whole attention.
Seriously, we're in it now.
We? You're the one who always puts us in it, passing along those horrible instructions.
Mm-hmm, and I'm right back at the starting point. Jordan will tell this Smitty to kill Corky Ballou. But who is Smitty? What does he look like?
It's always the same, Phil.
Yes, but in this case, we've got a lead.
Rosedale Lake.
That's right. Training camp for Corky's fighters. He'll probably get back there late tonight or early tomorrow. And Jordan will have passed on his information to Smitty. It's too bad you have to work tomorrow.
Who said
I have to. Dr. Lee's in Philadelphia, a medical convention. And the office is closed for 2 whole days.
Oh. Well, it's a long, grueling trip, and...
And I love a trip. And Phil?
Huh?
Jordan is slimy. I don't just plain old hate him. I loathe him.
I know what you mean. But don't let your emotions carry you away.
Something I wish would happen to you.
What?
Here you take me out for an evening, drive me home. I invite you in, and what do? Make love to me? Tell me what your emotions are doing to you? No.
Come here.
No, thanks.
Come here.
No.
I said come here.
Well, if you put it like that.
The Syndicate works in many ways, and this was a new one even to Phil Gault, alias the Whisperer. With their ramified network operating at top efficiency, they are trying to gain control of a large block of the fighting interest throughout the nation, with one tentacle of the giant octopus reaching into Central City. After Phil had said goodnight to Ellen, he drove back to his apartment, trying to figure out how he could put a stop to the Syndicate's plans. Towards morning, he fell into a restless sleep, and...
Hello.
Hello, Gault.
It's speaking.
Oh, did I awaken you?
Yes, you did, Jordan. What time is it?
It's 8:30. A good attorney should be out of bed and in his office by this time.
Who said I was good?
I'm leaving on a little trip, Gault, and I've got some information for you. If you'd like to drop by my office.
Sure.
Could you make it in about half an hour?
Right.
Matter after all, Gault. There's always an explanation for everything.
You're referring to Kid Noonan?
Yes, that's right. The answer is that there are only 2 or 3 fighters who will take a chance with him in the ring.
Oh, just a moment. I have a list somewhere in my pocket. Corky Ballou gave it to me. Here it is.
Oh, may I see it?
Certainly. Those are the fighters Corky'd like to have Kid Noonan fight.
And none of them are available.
Well, I was quick checking you did, Jordan.
Huh? Oh, well, it's my business, Gault. When I undertook to become a member of the commission, I decided I'd do the best job I could for the best interests of boxing.
I wish more of our public servants had that kind of outlook.
Yes. I spoke to 2 promoters this morning. Both of them have a peculiar attitude about Kid Noonan.
Oh, what's that?
They don't want to do business with Corky Ballou.
Any particular reason?
They both said he was difficult to deal with, and they'd just as soon fill their cards with fighters not managed by him.
So there are 2 reasons why Kid Noonan won't be able to get fights. No fighters available, and the promoters won't play with Corky. That's a double squeeze, Jordan.
Well, there you have it, Gault. If Corky wants to fight with the champ...
Corky says the kid's not ready for the champ yet.
Then there's nothing else I can tell you. As you can see, there is no indication of a blackball or, how did you say it, monopolistic practices.
It's a pretty quick whitewash, Jordan. But thanks for the promptness, anyway.
Not at all.
About time you came out.
Ellen, what are you doing here?
I called you at home. You weren't there. I thought you'd left for Rosedale Lake without me, and I was furious. And then I suspected you'd be calling on Jordan, and I looked up his business address, and, well, here I am.
So I see. Ellen, this is going to be dangerous.
I'm going.
It's getting more and more complicated, and if I don't spot Smitty, I don't know how to stop this thing. But I did make a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
No, not to the Syndicate. To a friend of yours.
Mine?
Well, he was much more attracted to you than he was to me. Tommy Farrell, the reporter. You remember him.
Oh, you're not mixing him up in this case.
There are 2 problems we have, sweetheart.
Let's get started. It's a long drive.
Okay.
2 problems, you said. I know one, to save Corky Ballou from the city.
That's right. And the second is, what's to become of Kid Noonan? How's he going to get fights? Because even if we succeed in saving Corky, the Syndicate doesn't forget. And the Syndicate won't give up its plans to get their hands on Kid Noonan's contract.
So you called Tommy Farrell?
Publicity, sweetheart. If the papers make enough noise about a fighter not being allowed to fight, then the Syndicate won't press. They can't. The way they operate, it's always got to be undercover.
Well, what's Tommy going to do?
First, he wants to make sure what I told him is the truth. He's flying up to Rosedale Lake this afternoon.
Flying?
Now, one of his pals lends him his helicopter whenever he needs it.
Oh, beats driving, doesn't it?
Well, aren't you enjoying the drive?
Yes, Bill. It's what we're driving towards that I'm not enjoying. Oh, it's beautiful, Phil. Look at the sun sparkle on the water. And the air so clean.
Mm-hmm. There's the hotel. We'll drive around the back.
There's a boxing ring, Phil.
Mm-hmm. Punching bags, equipment.
Nobody's here, though. Say, how about some lunch in the hotel, and then we'll look up Corky?
Well, maybe he's not here.
He'll be here, sweetheart. The syndicate doesn't make mistakes. And they said he'd be here. You didn't see Corky last night, pal? His face was a mess. Good going over because he wouldn't sell the kid. Now I'm afraid the ones who want to buy aren't going to stop with a beating.
Oh, the syndicate?
That's right. Ellen, you all right?
All right.
Are we near his place, Farrell?
Pretty close. They're moving into the boxing racket, huh?
Already moved in.
Yeah, I kind of smell that here and there.
Smell will get worse. The only thing that can help is publicity. Lots of it.
Well, I'm your boy. Oh, through that brush over there.
Yeah. That it?
All right. Now, there are a couple of more bungalows farther on, but this is the one Corky uses himself.
I don't see any signs of him.
Well, let's go in. We can see if he's around.
All right.
Come in. Come in.
Phil, a gun.
Uh-huh.
Well, I said come in.
I never thought I'd be able to do it. He took his eyes off me. He didn't know I had a gun. I got it late last night.
Take it easy, Carl.
Yeah, take it easy. What was going on?
Hey,
here, sit down.
He was going to take me to the lake and shoot me.
Nice business.
Because I wouldn't sell kid's contract.
Yeah, looks like you tagged another story for me, Gorm.
Yeah, look, Corky, you haven't got a thing to worry about. Huh? I knew it was coming. That's why I came up here.
How did you know, Gorm?
Huh?
Put up your hands. You, Corky, drop the gun.
So, this was the little trip you mentioned, Jordan.
Yes, that's right. What are you doing here, Galt?
Well, Corky's my client, remember?
Yes. And how did you know what was going to happen?
It wasn't hard to figure, Jordan. Not after the beating Corky took yesterday.
It's beginning to look to me like you knew quite a bit of the deal. Perhaps you were in on the whole thing, Galt.
Oh?
I've been investigating. Someone wanted to buy you out, Corky. Didn't Smitty tell you he was representing someone else?
That's right.
Maybe it was Galt here.
He did say something about...
There, you see? You never know who you can trust, Corky. Now, wouldn't you say that if the tables were turned and Galt had this gun, he'd shoot all of us?
I don't think so, Jordan.
I seem to remember your face. Who are you?
Tommy Farrell.
Oh, yes, a newspaper man.
A newspaper man who knows a story when he sees it, Jordan. How did you know this gunman here?
I didn't know him.
You knew his name?
Did I? It must have slipped out.
So you can drop the act, Jordan. We all know what you are and who you work for.
Now, that's a shame, especially for Miss Norris here. I'd really grown quite fond of her. She has an unusual wit. It touches a responsive chord in me. All right, now stand up, Corky.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Take your hands out of your pocket, Dolph.
I was just going for a cigarette. Do you mind?
Well, you won't need it.
Oh, come now, Jordan. The condemned man is always granted a last request.
Certainly, Mr. Galt. Pass them around if you like.
Phil.
Of course, sweetheart. One for you, too. The catch on this cigarette case is sometimes hard to release.
Phil, no.
What is it?
That case is explosive. There's enough dynamite in there. Phil, don't press that case.
What's the difference? Dynamite or Jordan's gun? I might just as well press this.
Oh, Phil!
Here. Okay, drop it. Drop it. Come and still up. Corky. You.
I shot him.
Good job, too, Corky. He's dead.
That's twice.
Phil.
What, sweetheart?
You were going to press that catch and blow us all to smithereens. You were going to, I know.
Of course, sweetheart.
Ah!
You never can tell what a woman will scream at, Farrell. Let this be a lesson to you.
It wasn't loaded.
With cigarettes?
You tricked me.
Uh-huh.
You knew I'd be frightened.
Yes, dear, and raise a commotion in case I needed one. Corky.
I never even shot a gun before today. The police, what'll they do?
Nothing. It was self-defense, Corky.
Yeah. Oh, I'll call him.
Corky, are you coming into Central City soon?
Tonight.
How about driving my car down for me? I want to find out what a helicopter ride is like.
Well, we won't be able to keep Kid Noonan from giving fights now. Not when every newspaper in the country exposes the syndicate moving in on a boxing game.
That's what I thought. You newspaper men have your points, after all.
I always thought so, too.
It would be real nice up here in the clouds, if there are only two of us.
Oh, don't be bashful, pal. Anything you want to tell me, you can say in front of Ellen.
Getting a little airsick, Galt? Be glad to drop you off anywhere.
No, feel fine.
You have a spare parachute.
Oh, I wouldn't think of taking a spare ferrule. Suppose Ellen had to get out and summarize.
Oh, keep it up, boys. It's building the old ego. There's only one thing, Tommy, that makes me stick so close to Phil.
Oh, tell me, I'll cultivate it.
His gadgets. Like that cigarette case thing.
That was a psychological gadget, Ellen.
Would that make it a psychological case?
Oh, Ellen, that does it. Ellen, you can use that parachute any time.
Based upon stories and characters created by Stetson Humphrey. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
The Whisperer, on Tuned to Yesterday from August 12th, 1951 on NBC. And that brings to a close this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. It's been a pleasure.